Hello and welcome to the Sports Report Podcast, episode 26. I'm Billy. Alejandro and Aiden aren't here today, obviously, because of the coronavirus. Hopefully they will be joining us later on for future episodes, and hopefully when this thing gets over. I mean, it's been going on for way too long, I think, and definitely has impacted the sports world in so many ways in terms of league cancellations, which everything's canceled pretty much, and just overall morale and how the world has really reacted to all this stuff has just really sucked for sports. And all these leagues going bankrupt and having to cut salaries and stuff, it just really sucks. So hopefully, now that sad stuff is out of the way, hopefully I can push more out here with some of the more positive news. Also, we will touch on some coronavirus stuff, but we're going to be mostly looking at a lot of NFL stuff today. We got a lot of NFL draft stuff to talk about, and a lot of NFL, obviously there's still some free agency moves going on with Cam Newton, stuff like that. Also, we have some NBA news in terms of them coming back, also the NHL, and a lot of that, all that stuff, and sadly the XFL. So let's get right into it. First up, we have Tua Tagovailoa, according to insiders, is falling in the NFL draft. Now, is this really a surprise to anybody? Tua Tagovailoa, great quarterback. I think he threw like 33 touchdowns or something this season. I think to like 6 interceptions. I don't have the stats right now. This is just off of the top of my head. Really good season until he got the hip injury against Mississippi State. Now, he's had multiple injuries to his hips and stuff. And for a quarterback, that's really key. Obviously, you want to rotate your hips and you want to have good mobility for a quarterback. You know, you're low and back throw, you got to have your hips low it up. And for me, if I'm in a GM's position right now, I'd be somewhat out on Tua unless he falls back. I would not take him in the top 10. I don't think Tua is necessarily, even without the injuries, I don't think Tua is as special as people think that he is. I think that Tua is a good quarterback, yes, and without the injury concerns, could definitely be a starting quarterback in this league. Just I don't think he brings that oomph, you know? He's not Joe Burrow he doesn't have the feeling of Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow has the feeling like, okay, that guy's a surefire. He's going to light it up. He has that Patrick Mahomes kind of mentality. You know he's going to do good. That Drew Brees or anything like that. But we have Tua over here with injury concerns, and that's just really rough. And if you can't stay healthy in college, but behind probably one of the best lines in the country in Alabama, then how do I expect you to go to, say, the Dolphins, who middle of the pack in terms of line, maybe a little far back. They still need some tackles. You know, Josh Jones out of Houston might be able to go over there and help them out, or maybe they trade up and get some. Well, I highly doubt that because they have 3 picks in the first round. They'll probably stick. But they're obviously, I think, going to get a tackle or a guard or something in that first round with one of those 3 picks. So say you throw Tua into the Dolphins, you know, how is he supposed to stay healthy behind that line? That's going to give him way more hits against guys that are coming out of the AFC East. You got good pass rushers in there, Hightower and, you know, Van Noy's on the Dolphins. Dolphins defense is always ferocious. Tremaine Edmonds, you got good lines coming out of the AFC and good pass rushers, and it's just going to be really tough for Tua to stay healthy in there. And even if he goes anywhere in the NFL, you're still facing against the very best. This is better competition than any NCAA game that he'll ever play in. And it's just – it's concerning. It's concerning. I wouldn't take him until the mid-teens of the first round at most. It's just, it's a hit or miss. It's either you're going to get a really good quarterback and, you know, he might be average, or you're just going to get injury plagued guy. He's going to end up like RG3 or something. And, you know, it's, It's sad because Tua is such a talent. Tua has a lot of talent. And another thing about his draft stock is how much, and this can go for Burrow too, how much of his production is based off of his weapons around him. Now, Tua has everything at Alabama. He had Najee Harris behind him as a running threat to take more eyes off the pass. He had Jerry Jeudy, possibly the best wide receiver in America. I personally think CeeDee Lamb. Anyways, and he had the speedster Henry Ruggs, who has amazing potential in the NFL and was the secondary option to Jerry Jeudy. When you have Henry Ruggs, who's a possible, maybe even top 10, but he's between like the 10 and the 20s. He's in the teens right now in projections. You have that guy as your second wide receiver and you have Jerry Jeudy. I mean, insane. And he's been playing with great players his whole entire career. He had Damian Harris in the backfield. He had Bo Scarborough at one point. He, you know, just insane offenses. And obviously that brings in them into national championship contention. But when you look at Tua, you can see he's put out all these videos and stuff. You see that he has really the drive to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. He looks the part. And I just have so many doubts. There's just too many things going against him. There's a lot of offensive weapons. He's had that. Alabama's never really produced a great quarterback besides for Joe Namath, which is all the way back in the 60s. Nowadays, it's more running backs and, you know, defensive linemen, linebackers, all around besides for quarterback. You can say if any quarterback out of Alabama in the last 20 years that had success would be A.J. McCarron. And right now he's sitting as the backup for whatever team he's on right now, probably the Raiders, I'd want to say. I don't know. But, you know, it's concerning. He's probably had the best numbers out of all those quarterbacks, but he might have had the best offense. And, you know, one of those games that I look back on to judge Tua, and it's probably one of his worst games. I like to look at this game to see what Tua can do. I like to look at the games where you're playing against a non-conference opponent, although SEC is truly amazing, and you're playing in high-level, high-stakes games to see if players can compete and win in those type of games. And that game is the national championship against Clemson for Alabama when Tua played against the freshman Trevor Lawrence. And Alabama got completely pummeled. That's not entirely Tua's fault because the defense gave up, 44 points or something. And I think Bama put up 16, which is on Tua. And Tua threw, two interceptions or three in that. Just horrific. He made really bad throws. And, you know, you can also look back at the, I believe it was Georgia National Championship when Tua pulled off the win when he came in for Hurts. That is also there. Yeah. And that's really clutch. One of the clutchest moments in NCAA football history. But you look at that Clemson game and, you know, that's the top tier team. That's the Super Bowl of college football. And he failed. He failed. So you don't know what you're getting with Tua. It's kind of like it's not blind, but the decision's just not there. I prefer Herbert over Tua just because I feel like I can judge Herbert better than I can Tua. With Herbert, you're going to get starting quarterback. I don't think he has bust potential, very little. He can stand up in the pocket, make throws. He's a prototypical quarterback that can make all the throws. He seems like a good field general and a good leader. And, you know, he played in the Pac-12, which is but still played in the Rose Bowl, got wins, and he put up production. And even coming out if he came out as a junior last year, he was still, I think, one of the top quarterbacks that would have been in that draft coming into this year. And now he comes out with Burrow and Tua, and he gets totally thrown back. So I preferably think Herbert is the one behind Burrow. Obviously, Burrow, I would never say anybody's going to be above Burrow in this draft as a quarterback because the man's insane. I mean, he had like 60 touchdowns, got the touchdown record, and that's 1 year, yes, but even before that, he's still like consistent production and just great mentality on Burrow, just winning everything. You know, a lot of these quarterbacks have great mentalities. But yeah, I'm not super high on Tua. I think I can understand why teams are dropping on him. There was a report that came out that three teams took him entirely off their draft board. I would not do that. But it's definitely going to be tougher. There's going to be a lot of busts in this draft just because people, with the coronavirus and everything, you have these FaceTime interviews, but they can't bring them in. They can't work them out. A lot of people didn't have their pro days because they got canceled, so they had to do, like, personal pro days. But you can't see them in person. That's really tough for certain teams. Miami, there was a report that they tried to get Tua in right before all the cancellations started happening, and that didn't happen. They were too late on that. So there's some interest from Miami. If any team, I think he's going to Miami. The Chargers, I don't even think are going to take a quarterback at this point. They seem like they're really stuck on Tyrod Taylor, which I don't really understand because I don't think he's really going to get them anywhere. He could make the playoffs, though. Chargers are there, but a guy for them at the moment, I just don't see there. What was it? I just lost total track of my mind. Yeah, Tyrod Taylor is not the guy for the Chargers. I think Herbert would be much better there because, Tyrod would maybe be a good mentor, although he's a total different system type of quarterback. He's more of a runner, and Herbert's more of that prototypical pocket type of player. You know, Tyrod he's kind of a good mentor for Baker, I guess. Well, Baker's he's more mobile, but more of a pocket type guy as well. But we'll see where the Chargers go. That organization is, I don't know what's going on over there, but I guess we'll see. So that's what I think for Tua. Tua is just not my type of quarterback. He's not, the injury concerns are just too much for me, and that's all I'm going to have to say with that. So just saying, I wouldn't trust Tua. I would not trust Tua. I'm a Patriots fan, so if the Patriots took Tua at 23, I'd be ecstatic because that's a steal. But at the same time, I'd be very concerned. It's not like a surefire thing, whereas like, Kenneth Murray from Oklahoma, I'm like, I'd be really hyped because we need a linebacker. So I just don't see Tua doing as much in the NFL with those injuries. I just think he's going to be too injury prone, and I don't feel comfortable with that. Let's look at some of the NFL virtual draft plans. So the NFL virtual draft, they have EA making sims of players on stage and prospects that get drafted are going to be able to choose high schools to get $2,500 towards their athletic programs, I presume. So that's very good. The NFL, you know, a lot of these leagues struggling with money, but they're instead contributing money because the NFL has enough money to get through this. Obviously, the XFL didn't, but the NFL certainly does. Billions and billions of dollars. So they're giving out $2,500 for whatever the prospect chooses when they get drafted. A really nice touch there. Any contribution to high school football, obviously, I support. I think that's really important for them, and obviously helps them out, grows the game. And that's really nice. EA also making sims. I'm going to be really interested to see how this virtual draft actually works because, we've never seen this before. And I'm so used to the packed crowds. You know, the NFL draft is the biggest draft event ever out of all the sports. It's the biggest one. And I'm just really interested to see how that works out with the virtual stuff. You know, last year in Nashville, I'm used to seeing, you know, Rich Eisen and all those guys sitting at the table up there, all the fans down there, everybody going crazy, you know. Raiders and Rays hitting Music Hall, the Jets fans freaking out. It's not there anymore, but you know, I was really hyped to see this Las Vegas thing. Unfortunately, that's out. But the virtual draft is certainly a new thing, and I'm kind of excited to see that. It'll be interesting. Another tidbit from this is that 58 players are to be involved in this virtual draft, which is unusual. Usually there's, I don't have a certain number, but just off the estimation of watching the draft, it seems like there's maybe like 30 players. Like most of the first round goes up to the stage to accept their jersey and, you know, hug the commissioner and everything. So there's usually just like 30 invited. But there's 58 for the virtual draft. I don't know how, like, being invited to the virtual draft works. Because, like, are they just going to pop up on the FaceTime screen? Like, how is the green room going to work? Is there going to be, like, a green room of just a Zoom call of NFL prospects? Like, how is this going to work? What's the details here? But apparently 58 people have been invited. So that pretty much fills the first and second round of selections. So interesting to see there. It'd be kind of embarrassing if someone falls to the third round. They're still in the virtual draft invites. So that will be interesting to see, I guess. There's just not really much sense to why that's 50. I don't know. Another interesting thing about this is that Roger Goodell is going to be announcing the picks from his basement. Now, I don't know what Roger Goodell's basement looks like, but it'd be hilarious if his basement is very, very rundown. I highly doubt that, though. Goodell's basement, we're going to see his home basement, see his decor of the NFL commissioner, see if he's putting that, I think he's making like $100 million or something on his contract to good use. This draft is so unusual, and I'd like to see what the NBA does for theirs. Obviously not as big as the NFL's, but just really interesting. The draft in Vegas was going to be so good. It was going to be so good. The NFL draft was so good. But now, like, how are they going to televise this? It's going to be on ESPN. It's going to be on, I'm assuming, ABC and the NFL Network. But I think, like, when you do this in a studio, like, sports, I think the WNBA draft did, like, theirs with it in a studio, obviously, like, social distancing and stuff, but, they did that in a Sports Center studio or something like that, and their commissioner was standing up somewhere, I'm not sure in the studio, but probably at home, and was selecting, people to go into that league, so I would think that would make more sense for the NFL to do that, but we'll see how it goes. I think that the NFL Network or ESPN might have studios every once in a while, and they'll be talking, and then maybe there'll be a little window pop-up. Maybe they'll talk to players through the draft or something. That would be kind of cool, having an insight where you could directly talk to the players. And Goodell pop up every once in a while, select. Also, they're giving more time to the teams now if they want to make a trade so that the clock doesn't run out because of internet problems, because now we have that. So they're going to have, if they're in the middle of making a trade and the clock runs out on them, they're not going to get Vikings syndrome and lose their pick. They're going to actually be able to execute that trade. So that is a good measure. Also, there's going to be more security and things like that. And other things like that. More NFL rules that came out in the past few weeks. Obviously, we haven't done this podcast in the past few weeks, so here's one. The NFL is unlikely to bring back pass interference review. Now, personally, I think the pass interference review was half and half. They reviewed things and made bad calls, but at the same time, we were clobbering for pass interference review for the past like 5 years because all of these bad PI calls, like in the Rams Saints NFC Championship game, obviously. And why would we remove that now? Because we don't want that to happen again, obviously. And now with the review, you're just clarifying the PI, and obviously, a lot of plays in the NFL can be classified as PI, and that's why a lot of people don't want that, but the refs just need to learn to be more lax, and if they're signed outright, then do it. I think when they first came out with this rule, we did a podcast, and I said the same thing. I said, I like this rule if they enforce it, only if it's like a major pass interference. If it's not major, just let them play. Let them play. But if it's major, there's going to be outrage, and they're going to, like, the city of New Orleans is going to sue the NFL, then call it a PI. It's simple. It's simple rule to enforce. And these, do we need to hire better refs? Because it's a simple rule. It's a simple rule. I could call this rule. It's simple. Someone needs to get on that and get it done. Get it done. We shouldn't remove this because it's just going to be more outrage, more Saints fans, more Saints fans. Do we want more Saints fans in the comments on Instagram and Twitter just yelling? No, we don't. We don't want that. So let's keep it. Let's keep this rule. The Saints fans, oh my gosh, they will be on outrage if this gets removed. Antonio Brown. Yeah, Antonio Brown. He hired a new agent in his effort to get back into the NFL. Now, AB, I know you're probably not listening, but here's a talk, personal talk here. You really screwed up. You really screwed up. And I like that you've been taking time off. You've kind of calmed down. You haven't been in the news in a while. As far as I've known, past few months, no. And I like your efforts that you're trying to come back into the NFL. You know, it's your passion. But it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I'm sorry to break the news. It's not going to happen. No one... AB's too much of a locker room problem at this moment to get on any roster. There's all these rumors of Tom wanting him. And will he go to Tampa Bay? Bruce Arians? No. Bruce Arians dealt with AB in Pittsburgh. And even back then, I guess he sensed some problems with them because Bruce Arians wants nothing to do with AB. Nothing to do with AB. Tom Brady, you know, does he really want AB that much? I don't think he does. He has Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and OJ Howard for the moment. He doesn't want that. He doesn't want that. He probably wants a running back. That's about it. I mean, AB, you're not coming back to the Raiders. You burned that bridge. You burned the bridge with the Pats. That's gone. You burned the bridge with about every other team. The Saints, I think you called out after they gave you a tryout. So you burnt that bridge. And they signed Emmanuel Sanders too, so they're good. They're loaded. You burnt it. You ruined it. And now you're getting all this online beef and stuff that's fake and like just stop. You're ruining it. You're turning into this psycho celebrity type of figure. And you're every single jab you make and bad decision and all this is just distancing yourself away from the NFL. And you've took shots at the NFL and stuff. Would the NFL even let you back into the league if you got a contract? I don't think they would. They'd probably just suspend you, leave you suspended. And nobody wants to pick up that contract, have you suspended for a year, and then bring you back. They're not going to do a Josh Gordon because this is as bad as Josh Gordon stuff has been. This is worse. This is way worse than Josh Gordon. AB is a bad locker room presence, and there's nothing worse than a bad locker room presence on a team that wants to win a Super Bowl because that can throw everything away. When AB got signed by the Patriots, it was a great thing, but then he destroyed the locker room's morale, and he left, wasted money, and that wasted pretty much the whole entire wide receiver room. I went into a mad panic, and the Patriots get eliminated in the wild card round. And they're in the wild card round instead of the divisional, which they are almost a lock every year. So AB sent franchise spiraling. He made the Raiders waste picks and all this. And also the Bills, that's a burnt bridge. The Bills are a burnt bridge as well. They're not wanting you back. They got Stephon Diggs too, so. Problem solved. AB, Just stop on that. You had a chance at the XFL, maybe. That failed, so you lost on that. But it's too bad. Too bad. Wasted talent. One of the best wide receivers of the decade. Just wasted talent. Wasted talent. Next news is that NFL scouts reportedly really like Jared Stidham. They really like Jared Stidham. Now, Stidham and Hoyer are the two quarterbacks. Cody Kessler got released. How do I feel on Jared Stidham? Now, Stidham, first of all, let's go back to his college days. In college, Jared Stidham played at Baylor for his first year. Tremendous. He was a freshman, and he put up very good numbers. They were a passing offense. Really good numbers. Obviously, it's the Big 12, so worse defenses and more passing and bigger numbers. Numbers are inflated in the Big 12, but nonetheless, very good season. Then the whole entire scandal thing over at Baylor happens, and he decides to transfer over to Auburn. Now, Auburn, it's more of a running offense, not a ton of passing. Yes, they have produced good quarterbacks in Cam Newton, but not really the home of a pocket passer. Not the home of a Jared Stidham type. And when people point to his numbers at Auburn, he did very good for a quarterback that doesn't really fit the system. He was in a bad system for him, and he still was a very successful quarterback. And he was a first-round prospect before his last year of college ball, which I think he still did good in. It's just the system. I blame that on the system, personally. And I think Stidham is going to fit more into that Patriots system. He's more of a passing offensive type of guy. And a Belichick system, I think, matches Stidham perfectly. Now, Stidham was a first-round product. I still think he was a first-round value. They got him in the fourth round. That was a very good pick. At the time, I really liked Will Grier, so, you know, throw the shots at me now. Will Grier already looks like a bust, so that was a bad prediction by me. So I'm not always credible, and don't take this all the time, but I tend to think I'm good at this, predicting things, but I think Jared Stidham can be a successful starting quarterback in the league. I'm not saying that he's going to be amazing. I'm just saying that he can get you 9-7, 10-6 with the record, with the team for the Patriots right now. The Patriots have enough weapons to get themselves there, and I think they can somewhat get to that level of 9-7, 10-6. They'll probably make the playoffs. I still think they'll make the playoffs. The Caesars sportsbook in Las Vegas set it at 8.5 for the over-under. I think it's more of a 9 or a 10. So Stidham, I'd like the Patriots to get someone in the third round like Jalen Hurts or Jacob Eason. Those are the two guys that I really like in the draft. I would like to see either one of them fight Stidham out for the job, but I think Stidham ultimately, he's going to beat up Brian Hoyer. The Rappaport report where he said Hoyer right now is the starting quarterback is bull. That is total bull. There's no way Brian Hoyer would beat out Jared Stidham right now. Jared Stidham's younger, way better. Brian Hoyer's not getting better than he's ever been. He had that 1 year in Cleveland, and then he got injured, and then just he has never really gotten even better. And even then, he was still average. So he had games here and there. But Hoyer's a backup. He's a career backup. He can be in there every once in a while. But Stidham, we haven't seen yet, besides for preseason, which he was the best preseason quarterback last year out of all the rookie quarterbacks. So, you know, Kyler Murray, any of those guys from that class. So that shows that he is a good quarterback, at least in the preseason. We'll have to see in the regular season. The regular season snap that he took right through the pick six, the Jets, was ugly. But that was like, what, five games in, six games in? I don't know, somewhere around there. But he's getting acclimated to the system. Belichick really likes him. He's had some friendships around the team, and I think he'll do well for the Patriots next season. And I think he'll probably win the quarterback battle with whoever the rookie quarterback is if they bring one in. So we're going to take a really quick ad break right now, and we'll be back after that with second half of Sports Report Podcast, episode 26. And I'll see you then. And we're back from the break. And let's get right into some more NFL draft news. So the Detroit Lions, they're looking at trading out of the number three position, which presumably they'd either take Jeffrey Okuda, who is basically their need. They need corners. They have Justin Coleman, who I ranted on a while back in the podcast. May have been the first podcast. But probably around the fifth. Last year. Anyways, they just have Justin Coleman, so Okuda would make a lot of sense, especially because Okuda is probably, rightfully so, the three best prospects, not in order, but the three best prospects are probably going to go top three. So the Lions, they need Okuda. They need a corner. You can get corners farther back in the draft, yes. But Okuda by far is the best corner in this whole entire draft. So I don't know why you'd want to trade out of that position, but you could get a lot of other assets because a lot of people are trying to trade up for a quarterback, especially if they feel that Detroit is possibly going to take a quarterback if they don't get them to trade out of that position. Because there's been rumors of Tua to Detroit instead of Matthew Stafford starting at quarterback. I still think Matthew Stafford's very capable. I think he's just been given a bad card. He's been given bad, Megatron's really been his only weapon. He's had Kenny Galladay, yes, but never really given a great coach, never really given a great defense. He's never really had that perfect team where you know it can go the distance. It's either he somehow has that like one weapon. It's like an average team and he pulls out 10 wins and loses in the first round of the playoffs, unfortunately. Or it's just very bad 3-13 like it was last season, although he was out for what, like six games maybe? I don't know. But the back injury is there too. So, you know, but why would you draft a quarterback who has injury problems to get away from a quarterback who still has time left but has injury problems? Doesn't really make sense. So I can see if they were playing on that and they don't want to take Okuda and just trade out of that. Some rumors have been like Stephon Gilmore for that pick. He's 30. Stephon's really good. He still has a lot of years left in him, but a heavy contract and you're losing your first round pick. You're losing about probably 8 years of Okuda till he's 30 to what Stephon Gilmore is right now, which he's 30. So you'd probably get like however many years is left on his contract, 2 or 3, I believe. So not the best trade. I'd like to see the Lions stand pat right here, or if they can get multiple first-round picks, like a late first this year, plus a first and maybe a third. That would be a good trade. I think that'd be fine, but I like Okuda a lot right now, and I think that it would just be better off for Detroit. Some more news is that Raiders, they want a wide receiver. We could see this coming. I mean, the Raiders only really have Tyrell Williams at wide receiver, so you'd expect that they want that. CeeDee Lamb has been thrown around. Also, Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy, they're picking at 12, I believe. So 12 for the Raiders. I think CeeDee might be off the board. But they're kind of right up there to get one of those three. I really like Henry Ruggs. I think he's super underrated. Stats don't show how good he is because he's behind Jerry Jeudy in that offense. So I think it would be better off for the Raiders to trade back, but and grab Ruggs. But it looks like they're going to end up with Jerry Jeudy if they really want a wide receiver, because I think someone's going to take CeeDee before them. I think the Jets are in front of them, and they're looking at a wide receiver. So CeeDee could be there for them. And, you know, these are really good wide receivers. It could go either way, really. The top two are going to be Jerry Jeudy, and they're going to be CeeDee Lamb. Those are going to be the first two off the board no matter what. And then Ruggs and LaVisca Chenault and all those guys. Now, scouts reportedly think that so offensive tackle, let's say this first. Offensive tackle Mekhi Becton is a very nice first name. Scouts are saying that he likes food too much. Mekhi Becton is a monster of a man. So I guess you could say that. Mekhi, giant guy. Very good in the trenches, good offensive lineman, and just how big and his combine and all that, and just his physical attributes have really got him up that draft board in the past month. So, personally, I really like Mekhi Becton. You know, he had this drug test thing that's kind of looming over him right now. I don't think this is that big of a problem. Scouts, why? He's an offensive lineman. Offensive linemen like food because they're big. So, he likes food more than football. This is a weird report. It's weird. Maybe some red flags on that. I mean, if you're really concerned about Mekhi Becton eating too much food, then just draft another offensive tackle, I guess, because it's stacked. You got Jedrick Wills. You got Tristan Wirfs, yeah, from Iowa. Blah, blah. You got Andrew Thomas from Georgia, yeah. So you got options. You got options. So if you don't want Mekhi, then there you go. I think Mekhi is one of the best in the draft. He played at Louisville, so it's like, eh. But the physical attributes are crazy. And I think that, you know, the AD at Louisville said that he was a class, A-class student athlete. Just a great guy. Great teammate. Everything you want in a student athlete. So he's getting good press from his college and from the people that know him. So I'm going to trust that. I think scouts are reaching here. Scouts always reach for things. They ask for weird things. And there's just some of them that are just crazy. And some are just crazy reports that are fake. And all this stuff leading up to the draft. Sometimes teams just play around, throw things around, downgrade draft stock so other teams can get them and stuff like that. And it's just crazy. And personally, Mekhi, I think you're a great player. I think Mekhi is going to do well in this league, and I think he has the potential to be a Pro Bowl offensive lineman. He's a good offensive tackle, and he's a player you want on your team. I mean, how can you pass on Mekhi? Another news from this draft, probably a UDFA, I'd say, after the draft, is Chase Vinatieri, nephew of former Patriots and Colts, now Colts kicker. Well, former, technically he's a free agent. Former Colts kicker, Adam Vinatieri. Arguably the best kicker to ever live. Now, Chase, there's been a lot of rumors, I think mostly because he's just Adam's nephew, that he could be the new Patriots kicker. Now, he's, I believe, like the third best on most draft boards, the third best kicker in the draft. So, first of all, he's out of South Dakota. That's kind of a red flag. You know, kickers it doesn't really matter what college they go to. There's ones out of like Division III that are amazing. So that doesn't matter. Now, Chase kicked 50% in his senior season. He's had some decent seasons, but he kicked 50%. I think it's more for his leg, but he just doesn't seem like the best kicker out there. I mean, I guess he could be an NFL kicker, but I see too many red flags. I mean, he shot 50%. He kicked 50%. He was 9 for 18, I believe, in his senior season. So why would you want that? You know, New England, they build themselves off of consistency. And if you have a kicker who is missing field goals, it's a 50-50 chance. It's not worth it. Rodrigo Blankenship out of Georgia, I think, is a much better choice in terms of this. But Vinatieri hitting 50% in college just doesn't seem right. And seems like more of a red flag for me. So personally, I'm out on Chase Vinatieri. I think it'd be interesting to see him come back. Well, not see him come back, but see like a Vinatieri come back to New England. That would be very interesting. But I'm personally out on him. If New England really has interest, then I guess they see something in him. But I'm out on Chase Vinatieri. And so we're into the Patriots news. Cam Newton is reportedly willing to wait in free agency for the right team, as he should, because newsflash, Cam Newton is not going to be able to choose like whatever team he wants, because there's no starting quarterback jobs out there right now for him. He's going to have to fight for it. So, you know, if you're just waiting for a surefire job, Cam, and a lot of money, then you're never going to get that, and you're going to wait for the rest of your life. Sorry to say. You know, Cam's a great quarterback. I love Cam Newton. I respect him, and I think he's a great quarterback. But Cam, you can't wait for the right team right now if your right team is start and make $17 million a year, because it's not going to happen. Cam is not that – it's not that he's not that guy anymore. It's that he's finding himself in a situation where there's not a lot of jobs on the market anymore, and teams already have their quarterbacks. The first week of free agency, everybody squared away their quarterback needs, and the ones that don't have their quarterback needs right now, like the Dolphins and the Bengals, even the Bengals still have Andy Dalton, but the ones that haven't squared away are going to get one in the draft with their first round pick, most likely. So, Cam, you got to take a backup job that's possibly winnable for cheap money, like in New England, or, you know, let's throw in Tennessee if Ryan Tannehill goes downhill. That's a good place to go. You can throw in Jacksonville, if Minshew falls down. He's rumored to want the Pats, which, I mean, okay, but you got to take a pay cut if you want to go over there. Cam, you just got to – you got to hold back. Take your, not necessarily your ego, but take your expectations. Take your expectations back. Take them back. Scale them back. Just put yourself in that transfer from Florida mode. You got to prove yourself. And, you know, he's working out. He's working really hard right now, and I can see that, and it looks good. He looks good. He looks like he's in shape. He looks like he's ready to play football. So I'd like to see him get in there. He's going to have a roster spot by the start of the season. He definitely will. But he needs to get in his mind that he can't expect the contracts that he's getting in Carolina now. He can't expect that. It's that stuff is over for next year, at least. Over for next year. Over. Gone. It's a prove yourself year. For him, for Andy Dalton, for Jameis Winston, it's prove yourself season. And if they don't prove themselves, then it's game over. So they gotta prove themselves. Next up, Houston acquired Brandon Cooks for a fourth and for a second round pick. Now, DeAndre Hopkins was acquired for a second round pick and David Johnson. So basically, they basically traded the package that they got for DeAndre Hopkins minus David Johnson for Brandon Cooks. Now, Brandon Cooks is a great wide receiver, but he's levels below DeAndre Hopkins, and he has a huge cap hit as well. So what are we doing here, Texans? What was the purpose? I at first thought this was just a cap thing, and, you know, everybody was kind of overblowing it, thinking that it was more of a personal thing. I thought it was just a cap thing. They were getting rid of that cap. But you now trade for another wide receiver, which they should do, obviously. But it's a huge cap hit. Brandon Cooks has a big cap hit. That's why the Rams were getting rid of him. So you're just gaining back the money that you gave away. You got David Johnson, who was a huge cap hit. So now you probably have more cap hit than you did before the Hopkins trade. I'm not completely sure if that's accurate, but doing the math in my mind, I think it is. What was the purpose of the Hopkins trade? You know, Brandon Cooks is a great player. He's going to bring a lot to him. And Kenny Stills, also projected to be traded. You know, they'll probably draft someone because they're getting rid of a ton of weapons. I don't know what's going on with the Texans. Bill O'Brien needs to be removed from that seat at the GM position. It's just not working at all. And another cap situation that we got going on now is the Panthers signed running back Christian McCaffrey to a 4-year, $64 million deal. This has $16 million a year over four. So Christian McCaffrey, in my opinion, him, Derrick Henry, Ezekiel Elliott's in there, but he runs behind the best offensive line in the country. So those guys are the best running backs in the country. Christian McCaffrey carried that team last year, carried them. But this could turn out with the Todd Gurley deal. That's why I don't like to pay running backs a ton. But he carried your team. And I don't think McCaffrey's really going to go downhill. It's only up from here. He just keeps getting better. I don't see any downhill slope for McCaffrey. And this Panthers team is young, so you're not going to have to pay a lot of people. And it looks really good right now with Bridgewater, DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, Christian McCaffrey, obviously, Robbie Anderson. Panthers team. I said this in the last podcast. I just love the Panthers. The Panthers, such a good young team right now, and I just see them doing so many good things in the future. And I don't see them getting in a cap situation where they have to get rid of McCaffrey. Matt Rhule came in. He saw what McCaffrey did for them last season, and he added all these guys, and just McCaffrey is such a good player. He saw that McCaffrey was such a good player, and he carried the team, and he is the heart and soul of that Panthers franchise, and he made sure to get him back. And, you know, you got Joe Brady coming as the offensive coordinator. That offense is going to be so deadly, and I think this is a better situation than the Todd Gurley one. I really think it is. I don't like when running backs get paid like quarterbacks. But I think this was somewhat of a necessary move. You already have your quarterback, so you don't really have to. You have your offense in place for about the next 2 to 3 years. So I think you're okay for there. So I'm in the preference of good move for that. Good move. And I don't think it's going to turn out like the Todd Gurley one. And, you know, if it turns out like that, then you can come back and throw that at me in a couple of years. But I don't think it's going to be like that. I think it's going to be very different. And speaking of running backs, so running backs and their contracts are always, always in the news in the offseason. And Joe Mixon is reportedly prepared to hold out. He's another guy that carried the offense, now a bad offense, but nonetheless an offense. And Mixon on the Bengals, let's look at some of his numbers. In 2019, he rushed for 1,137 yards and 5 touchdowns. Also had 35 receptions for 287 yards and 3 touchdowns. He's run behind a horrible line. The rookie, Jonah Williams, from last year got injured before the season could even start, so didn't even have that. I don't know what he wants for a contract, but he's had 2 1,000-yard seasons in his 3 years, and his rookie season, he had 626 yards. Also, he's sharing the backfield with Giovanni Bernard. Yeah, so I think this is a good idea to re-sign Joe Mixon. I wouldn't give him more than $11 million, though, because he's only done so much. But, I mean, his workload and what he's had to run behind and how good he's done off of that. Imagine when the Bengals get a good line. This guy's going to be insane. And you have Joe Burrow, too, and Joe Mixon. That will be insane. You need to keep that group together. And the Bengals' offense looks really good if you get a good offensive line with them. They got Tyler Boyd. They got A.J. Green. A.J. Green's getting older, so you really need to make sure that you keep him, get him some good years. And then you got Burrow, presumably, when they draft number one, and you got Mixon in the backfield. So I really think you have to sign Mixon. You probably have a lot of cap space right now. I know the Bengals are pretty cheap about their stuff, but you got to keep Mixon. And even if he does hold out, you know, you can just use that as – you yourself can use that as leverage because he's not playing. So kind of like what the Melvin Gordon thing did last year, that holdout failed. The same thing can happen with Joe Mixon. So it's not that horrible for the Bengals, but I'd like to get a contract done this offseason for Mixon if I were the Bengals GM, because you want to have him in training camp with Joe Burrow. I mean, Joe Burrow is going to be your franchise quarterback. So you need to have someone in camp with him to get things done. So Mixon, I'd like to have in there. Also, the Jaguars are trying to trade Leonard Fournette for picks. So the Jaguars are pretty much going to rebuild mode. So it somewhat makes sense to get rid of Fournette, but you remember, Fournette was drafted with a 4th overall pick, and he's been a monster for the Jaguars when healthy. Some stats from him. His rookie year, he ran for 1,040 yards and 9 touchdowns, and his receiving was 302 yards and 1 touchdown. He got injured in his second season, only went for 439 and 5 touchdowns. But this past season, best year of his career, 1,152 yards, 3 touchdowns, and he had 76 receptions for 522 yards, but no touchdowns. Just Leonard Fournette. Insanely good player, very underrated, and he's running behind a bad line too. So these are two, Mixon and Fournette. They're playing on bad teams behind bad lines, but they still get good numbers, and they're still pretty much the lifeblood of their respected offenses. I think Fournette's not going to command a ton of assets back on the market, on the trade market, because I think people see that the Jaguars are a little desperate to get assets from these guys that they want to trade because they want to rebuild. I don't think getting rid of Fournette's going to be the best for Minshew's development, because you got DJ Chark and you have some decent wide receivers out there. But besides for that, it's not really a great offense, and your defense is falling down really bad. So I would like to keep the foundation there. If you can get a first-round pick for Fournette, sure, that's a really good package, and you don't have to pay him $10 million or whatever he wants when he comes out of comes into free agency. But if you get a third-round pick, that's an absolute fail. He was traded you draft him with a 4th overall pick. He was somewhat worth that pick. He's a great running back. He hasn't even showed his whole entire potential because you don't have a good line in front of him. Like, come on, guys. Come on. If that's going to be the assets you get back, I'm totally against this trade. If you can get a first-round pick, sure. But I don't know what the Jaguars front office is doing. A lot of these front offices in this offseason have just been absolutely ridiculous. And especially the Texans. And, you know, AFC South has some whack front offices. So that's for the Colts. The Colts are all right. But they drafted Phillip Rivers when they had Jacoby Brissett. So they didn't draft Phillip Rivers. They signed Phillip Rivers to a $25 million contract. And we saw how Rivers did, and he's washed up. So, yeah. Next up, Odell. There were some rumors of him going to the Vikings. Jay Glazer was talking about all those big news in the same day. A local reporter said that Odell to the Vikings might happen, and then that got all connected. And Jay Glazer just, like, said that was super big news, but it was just the Rams center had coronavirus. He was the first one, but he was already recovered and stuff. It was a whole entire thing that we reported on our Instagram and stuff, and then it was a huge letdown. But anyways, the hope that Odell might get traded to the Vikings is still alive, and to any team, matter of fact. Odell, there's reports coming out that Odell and Baker aren't working out, and that's they're not working out together. They're not too friendly, I guess. And that's why we're getting all this trade buzz. Now, I don't necessarily think that there's a ton of weight to this, just because, you know, Odell had that video with the Browns where he got his New Jersey and stuff. That seems kind of like it's good. Even then, you know, you can throw that out the window. But Odell always has trade rumors every single year. Someone has to throw out Odell's going to get traded. It's only happened once, So I don't really see it happening again. I see Odell playing out his contract for the next year in Cleveland. So I don't see it really happening. And, you know, who knows what will happen there, but I just don't see Odell going. And now for some COVID-19 stuff. I know COVID-19 really sucks, obviously, and we've lost a lot from COVID. But one of the things that happened to the NFL is that we had COVID hit the NFL. And the first one was Brian Allen, I believe, the center from the Rams. Jay Glazer reported that on Wednesday night. Maybe. Anyways, it doesn't matter what night it was. He reported it. And then the next day, Von Miller comes out and says that he has COVID-19. So he's the first big name in the NFL that had COVID-19. Also, he has asthma problems, so that was really rough on him. But he's recovering well, and I hope all the best for Von. But it just shows it's going to start to ramp up in the NFL. Possibly, you know, it's really starting to hit, and that could have real effects on the NFL season. Obviously, the NFL right now is just going ahead like it's normal, and they're going to start up at this normal date. I think they can start up at the normal date. I don't think training camp's going to happen, really, and I don't think that there's going to be any fans really around the team until maybe December-ish, because I think this is just such a hit to society, and people are just so shell-shocked from it. And once we finally come out of all this quarantine and stuff, I still there's still going to be limitations, and the NFL is going to be really cautious about that. So I think the no fans is definitely a possibility, but who knows? Once more start to come, they're going to push back dates and stuff, and we'll see what Goodell does. But, you know, who knows? Who really knows? We're just hoping and praying that Vaughn's okay, obviously, and that the NFL gets through this and all of us get through this. And, yeah, so we're going to take a really quick break. We'll be back for our third segment. This is an extra long episode. We'll be back with the Bucks' new uniforms, the Browns' new uniforms, and the Falcons' new uniforms. I'll tell you what I thought of them. And we'll be back with other sports. You know, we've only covered the NFL through that. So we'll be back with NHL, UFC, soccer, the MLB, the NBA, the fall of the XFL, and college football. And we will be back in just a second. And welcome back for part three of this podcast. So let's just get right into these new uniforms. So the NFL really right now is releasing a lot of new uniforms for some teams. Three of those uniforms have already come out. The Rams, I believe, are also changing their uniforms. I don't know when that will be. The Patriots are changing their uniforms tomorrow from when this is recorded. So this was recorded on Sunday, April 19th. So Patriots will be getting their uniforms on Monday. So tomorrow. As of right now, the Buccaneers have already released their uniforms, the Atlanta Falcons, and the Cleveland Browns. So let's start off with the Bucs. The Bucs uniforms went back. So first off, their uniforms, initially, I hated. I hated their uniforms that they've had for the past few years. They're just ugly. The yellow doesn't work. It's just really bad. Like, the number design that they're going for, I can see what they're attempting to do. It just doesn't work out. But they went back to their kind of classic look that they had between, like, the mid-2000s. And I'd say they probably got rid of those, in 2013-ish, around there. They basically have those uniforms back, but they kind of have a yellow outline on the numbers on the away jerseys, which are really clean, mostly just white. The red ones look nice as well. Also, the ones that I like here are their alternates. The gray jerseys, amazing, perfect. It's a great way to have an alternate. I thought that was really nice. I thought the orange jerseys would have been nice for them, but I'm surprisingly very pleased with what they did with the gray jerseys. So for the Buccaneers, I have to give them like an 8 out of 10. I think it's a really good effort. I think they shouldn't have gone away from the ones that they had before, the previous jerseys. And it's kind of a newer update on those. I was never really a huge fan of the classic ones, but now that they have it kind of in this form, I really like them. I don't know what I don't like know specifically what I like so much about them from the other ones, but they're just good on the eye. I think that the Buccaneers did a really good job on this. Also, the pirate ship on the side instead of just the flag looks really nice. I thought that was a nice little design to put on the side. Now, that was a good uniform. Good way to switch it up. And then we go over to the Falcons. Split opinion on this one. They had kind of like the color change on this alternate, which is a red and the black on the bottom. So it's both colors. That's really ugly. And then the ATL font on all of them just looks bad. The white away jerseys are probably the best out of these, but this... I thought they should have just went to their old 90s throwbacks, which they still have, the solid black jersey. I thought those would have been interesting just to have those as their like permanent home jersey. But they decided to do this ATL thing. It just looks really bad. It looks like the numbers are way too big and the ATL's huge. It just doesn't work out in my mind. I'm going to have to give it like a 3.5 out of 10. Not a great jersey. Overall, definitely ruined a jersey that I liked before. I thought the Falcons had a nice jersey, although it had kind of the Riddle style, Rydell or whatever you want to call it, brand. Reebok, not Rydell. What was I thinking? Reebok style, that kind of the Cardinals still have. I like both of those jerseys, so it's not really a big problem for me, but... You know, these jerseys, they tried something, they reached a little too hard, and they don't look good in my mind. And then the Browns went back to their classic look from kind of did the same thing the Buccaneers did, just with even less change. Those jerseys are perfect. You know, they should have really never left that. That's kind of just, it's just classic Browns, and that's what everybody wanted, I think, besides for people that are not Browns fans. And then their alternate jersey is kind of a take on their color rush that they already had that they used as a home jersey last year, which I personally really like. I thought that would have been interesting if they made that the permanent home jersey still, but they went back to their old ones and that looks nice. The ways are really nice without the brown pants, just the all whites. And yeah, I thought the Browns did a good job on that. I'm going to have to give them a 8 out of 10 because it's really the same jersey, but they should have never left. So it's just kind of a subtle update on what they should have had in the first place. And that's all that has happened for jerseys. Hopefully next week, on that next week's podcast, we can review the Patriots jerseys, which are rumored to be their color rush as the home, and then a white take on that for the away. Also a few alternates. So those should be interesting, especially because they haven't changed their jerseys for over 20 years. So some news from already. Drew Brees decided that he's going to sign with NBC Sports once he retires. So Brees, I think, is still on a 1 or 2 year contract or 1 year with an option. So this is a while, but he's already agreed to go to NBC Sports for a commentator. So Monday Night Football still loses out on a possible commentator that would have been electric. I think Drew Brees is going to be one of those Tony Romo types and will probably be, you know, he's good in the public eye. So we'll see how that goes over to commentating, but definitely a lot of experience, one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. So it'll be interesting to see that. And also from the TV news, Hard Knocks, the training camp show that HBO airs every single season. They're going to have two teams this year if training camp even happens, which I think is heavily doubtful. So I'd expect Hard Knocks to be canceled. The two teams are going to be the Rams and the Chargers. Now, this is a big problem because, first of all, training camp's not even going to happen, probably. And LA is like the city that right now they are the ones that don't want any sports. They're probably going to be the last ones to get out of this thing that for sports. They're the last ones that are going to allow sports. So, you know, the whole entire NFL might be ready to start up, and then LA might be sitting back. So that doesn't look good for them at all. And I think LA needs to maybe lax off a little bit, because what they're doing right now is good for now, but, you know, we'll get to it later in the NBA, but they have some heavy restrictions on when they think the NFL will come back for them. So it's going to be interesting to see that. Now on to college football. So there's one bit of news from college football this season. Well, this week in college football, there was a poll, and apparently 88% of athletic directors in the NCAA want an expanded college football playoff in 2026. So 2026 is the only time where we're going to be able to expand the college football playoff, although we've been clamoring for it ever since it came out. So obviously we started with the BCS, and then we went to the college football playoff, which allowed four teams to compete for the title instead of just having the top two seeds. And now they're trying to get more teams in contention for the championship in 2026. I wish this could be closer, but it looks like this is probably going to happen. And I guess it would be an 8-team. I think that would probably be the limit. 12-team would be like way too long. But 8-team, I guess, would probably be what they would do. Maybe 6-team if something would work with that. I'm sure it'd be easier to do 8. But this is a great opportunity because it would bring in more of those teams like, say, a Memphis or a UCF that are from small conferences but had a really good season. So it will bring in teams like that, and it will also bring in teams that are from really good conferences but don't have the – they took maybe one loss that wasn't too good, and, you know, but they only have one loss, and you can still see them winning a couple games, like, say, a Baylor from last year or a Penn State or something like that, and then we can get in other small teams. So it would just be more action, obviously, more games, which we love, and more opportunity for teams that had a really good season but just narrowly lost a game or something like that. So I think expanding the playoffs is a great idea. I'm sure most people agree. 88% of athletic directors agree. So why not do it? And I think overall it would just be a great thing for the game, especially because in college football, the top schools have such a monopoly on recruiting. And it's always the same team with, even with the four-team format, it's usually the Alabamas, the Clemsons, or Oklahoma and Georgia. Those type of schools are always the ones that get the top recruits, and they're always the ones that are in the playoffs. But when you expand it, it kind of gets rid of that top 1% type of recruiting, where you can actually get in the other people that had a good season, maybe lost the game or something, and recruiting won't matter as much, and kind of that unfair advantage of people, top recruits, just choosing whatever school's the best kind of goes away, because you have more teams in there. And say like UNC's having a good recruiting, so that's kind of exception. UNC's kind of an exception this year. But teams that don't necessarily have top-tier recruiting but are still a really good team and maybe lost a game or something, they're going to get in. So that's why I think it would be much better. I'd like to see you guys' thoughts on that. But I think an expanded college football playoff would obviously benefit a lot of programs, bring in a lot of revenue for the NCAA, and would just give teams more chances, and it would be better for the fans as well. So I think it's just a win for everybody. So it's pretty much an obvious move in my books. Now on to the XFL. The XFL, after I believe, 5 weeks, canceled its season a few weeks ago. But there was still hope, and we were all waiting for the XFL to be all good. They let some people sign, and they were still going strong on social media, and they were pretty confident that they were going to be able to come back for the 2021 season. There was reports coming out that they would come back for the 2021 season, and everything was okay, but this COVID-19 thing kept going, and news came out last week that the XFL would suspend all operations and lay off most of its top employees, and it also declared for bankruptcy, pretty much ending the chances of the XFL ever coming back. So the XFL dies for the second time in the history of football, first being in 2001 after they actually successfully ended a whole entire season, but couldn't come back because it wasn't as successful. This time it was very successful. They had $500 million in funding, but the COVID-19 thing really just ripped that out of their grasp, and they had to declare bankruptcy. So just tragic for the XFL. The XFL was such a good brand of football with the kickoff rule and all the new rules that they put in, and it was really entertaining. You had PJ Walker, Jordan Ta'amu, all those players that were just, they have a chance in the NFL now from the XFL. And, you know, there wasn't the best players in the XFL because, you know, you were just picking from practice squads. And at college, like Kenny Robinson on the Battlehawks, he decided to go out of college and go to the XFL. Now he's going to be possibly a fourth or third round pick in the NFL draft. So it was a good brand of football, not the best players, but it was a great brand of football. And they made it entertaining, and you had the player interviews on the sideline, which were really nice. And I hope that NFL picks up some things from them like they did in the first run of the XFL, but now they can definitely pick up some things for them. And it just sucks that the XFL is going to go, because you think about it, the XFL, they were challenging the NFL as much as they weren't at the same time, because the XFL certainly does not have the same budget as the NFL. It certainly did not have the best players as the NFL. It had nothing. It was very low compared to the NFL. But over time, you think about that, XFL was getting good views, and they could have, after a couple of years, began a little push against the NFL for the NFL to improve itself. And, you know, I like the NFL. It's a good brand of football, but it's gotten a little soft over the years, for better or worse. They've done it for good things like protecting players and things like that, but also it's gotten a little like soft in the players' personalities and all that. But I know I love the NFL, but it just would have been beneficial if the XFL stuck around to kind of push the NFL to have a better brand of football, because whenever you have a product that opposes another product for whatever, it doesn't, not even if they're like threatening their top throne, it's just that they're an alternative. You want to, the top one's going to try to improve itself the distance from the other one. So the XFL was really that in my mind. It was a nice football league that was in the spring. So it's not in the NFL season, so it's going to get views. But at the same time, it's another brand of football that can push the NFL to hire itself as a better sports league. And the XFL, we just lost that. So the NFL can pretty much do whatever they want right now. And without the XFL, that just really sucks, to be honest. There's going to be, obviously, there's basketball in the NBA, so we're not losing a ton there. But I really hope the XFL can somehow rebound from this. I don't see it happening. But honestly, for the XFL, I just fell in love with it when I was on TV. And, you know, seeing PJ Walker make ridiculous throws and all that. And I was a Battlehawks fan, so Ta'amu and all that. There was great plays. It was a good game, fast-paced. and there wasn't really a lot of flaws in it. And, you know, you think with a startup league, like the AAF, for instance, they did it wrong. They didn't have a lot of funding. They weren't getting a lot of fans. It was just kind of, eh. It was all right. It was like, yeah, we have a brand of football, but it's just, eh. But the XFL just kind of challenged that, and they were really good. They were really good brand of football, despite having maybe not the best players. They gave it time, and they put all this time into the XFL, and it worked out until this. Without COVID-19, the XFL would still be playing right now, and I'm sure it would be here for years to come, but I don't think they're going to be able to rebound from this. So, sadly, the XFL is going to go, and I'm heartbroken by the XFL leaving, to be honest. The XFL was just such a good league, and that's all I have to say on that. So let's go to the NBA. Now, the NBA is pessimistic on a return. This was a report from a few weeks ago. It started to turn. There's more optimism now, but initially the NBA was pessimistic on a return and was trying to get players to agree to cancel the season. That was from Brian Windhorst, who usually has some good takes and usually has some good reliable reports. So that was initial. Teams are also trying to get the NBA to push back the draft from June 25th to at least August 1st. Obviously, they have to do this because if they resume play, it's going to go well past June 25th. And, you know, they were talking about the league calendar, that it might go to the next season might start on Christmas and stuff, because this is going to push for a long while. I don't see most sports leagues starting up until maybe like September, unless it's the NHL and the NBA, where they might do it in a remote place where there's no fans, like the NHL is trying to do and the MLB is trying to do in Arizona. So NBA GMs also want a month to prep for the players to come back, which I don't think really could happen, because they're getting so tight between the two leagues, not leagues, but the two seasons, the upcoming season, this season, if we resume. So I don't think they really have enough time for a month for the players to prep. I think they just need to prep through this whole thing, to be honest. I mean, it is their job, so they should be able to prep for this. And I don't think, if you want a season, NBA GMs, you gotta just tell your players to be ready to come back at any moment. And that's what they should do. Because, really, I don't think you're going to have enough time to have a month for the players to prep, unless somehow in, like, August or something, you have the go-ahead where you're like, we're definitely going to come back in September. So you can announce it then, but I don't think there's going to be anything really clear yet for a while. So it's going to be tough to do that. Now, as I was saying with LA, the LA's mayor said the city could be without sports till 2021. Now, this is a game changer because, first of all, they can play in a different location, yes, but 2021 seems like a bit of a stretch right now, even as far as this has gone. 2021 seems like a real big stretch, because if they reach that out, I think most cities would be opened up by then. And even to no fans, I think this is also attributed to for LA. So no sports at all, even without no fans. So that eliminates the Lakers. That eliminates the Clippers. That eliminates the Rams and the Chargers. I mean, those are some major teams in both leagues. So if the NFL goes ahead and it starts in September and there's no sports till 2021, what are we going to do with the Rams and the Chargers? I mean, if they're not going to be able to play, I guess you can move them or somehow, but that's going to be really tough to do. So I think you just have to go ahead without them. Also, the 49ers too, possibly, if it's all of California. So I'd say just take them out. Take them out of the league. You know, it's one team less on the division. Good for that division, but you know, you can do some rearrangements like the MLB has done or something like that. But if they're not going to come back, then, yeah. And if the Lakers and the Clippers don't, then that's going to be a big problem. And that those fans are definitely going to whine a little bit. But, you know, if your city's going to be like that, then you just got to take it. But also the neutral site thing, I think, is probably what's going to happen in the NBA. So the Lakers and the Clippers will probably just play in another state. So I'm sure they'll be fine. And as for the Rams, the Rams and the Chargers, that's a different story. That's a football team. And, you know, they have SoFi is going to open up this season, possibly. So it's just going to be really interesting to see what happens there. Yeah, the big situation with LA, and I think that's going to be a big piece of news in a couple months. It's going to be a major thing that they're going to have to deal with. Florida also said sports is a central service as of right now. WWE is going without fans at the Performance Center. And, you know, that opens up a window for the Miami Heat to possibly get back on the floor in Miami. So, and the Magic. So that allows possibly for basketball to open up possibly in Florida. Do I think this is really early to be opening that up? Yes, definitely very early. Nobody's really done that besides for Florida, but Florida's the first one to move on that, and it could be interesting to see if they do something with Florida. Also, that's good for the MLB, seeing as that they are trying to do that spring training thing. So it could be good for the NBA, but that's what we have right now. Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, their relationship is reportedly broken. This thing is a little, like, come on, Donovan. So anyways, if you don't know the story, Rudy Gobert, he was the first one in the NBA to get coronavirus, and he was acting very irresponsible before he found out that he got corona, and he was touching things, he was joking around. And Donovan Mitchell was the only other player on the team to get corona. Now, Donovan Mitchell has come out and said that it's going to be kind of tough for him and Rudy to make up about this, but I think Donovan's taking this a little far. Yes, he gave you corona. You didn't die, Donovan, nor were you ever going to. And it's not as big of a deal as Donovan thinks it is. I don't think that it's that big of a deal to get mad. I mean, you have a great team together right now. Do you really want to break that? Do you want to get rid of your best defensive player? Because without Rudy, the Jazz is just Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley, and Joe Ingles, really. Where's your big men? They're not there. So if I were Donovan Mitchell, I would make up really quick, because you're a great player, yes, but without Rudy, team's not much. And you don't destroy your team just because of this. This is not something to destroy your team about. He didn't cheat. He didn't, like, take your girlfriend or something. Like, come on. Come on, Rudy. Come on, Donovan. Just forgive Rudy. I'm sure he's sorry about it. You're fine. And the whole entire Jazz organization was fine besides for you and Rudy. And you guys are fine. You guys are good. You got corona and you got over it because you're athletes. Okay? Just calm down. Forgive him. You're not the savior of the world, okay? Donovan, I know you're trying to look good about it. And I love Donovan Mitchell. I think Donovan Mitchell is a great player, but you gotta put this behind you. Just forget it never happened. It ever happened, and just go ahead. Go ahead with your team, because you guys got a shot. You guys got a good shot with that roster, and you don't want to screw that up just because of this. And that's what I got to say on the Donovan Mitchell thing. So there you go. Now on to the MLB. The MLB has considered a home run derby during coronavirus. I think that's a good idea, but the big thing that the MLB is trying to, but also, like, how are we supposed to do a home run derby during Corona. I don't know. But hey, ask the MLB. Anyways, the MLB is trying to move their season to Arizona or do spring training like alignments of leagues in Florida and Arizona. How they're going to do the schedule while you have half teams and they're going to have the spring training alignment so that the Florida leagues for spring training, it won't be the same divisions as like normal. It will be the Grapefruit League, say, in Florida. You'll have those divisions instead of what you normally have. And they'll all be playing in Arizona. And so the conferences basically for baseball are gone. So the National League and the American League are gone. It's just the spring training leagues. So the teams that play in Arizona will be in one, and the teams that play in Florida will be in one. And Japan reportedly is also a destination for the MLB. I think this is really interesting. Mike Trout has spoke out against it because, you know, he's concerned that really how are players supposed to be expected to, you know, go to a hotel, go play baseball, then go back to the hotel and just do that for who knows what? The MLB season's a long time, so like 5 months. Like, how do you expect to do that? And also, just the arena spaces and agreements. Also, the MLB starting to cut pay, and it's a good idea. Is it flawed? Yes. Do I think the players would agree to it eventually? Yes, because I think they want to play baseball. I think they do. And I think the Arizona plan is a good idea. It's just, it's going to be really tough to get together. Like anything right now during Corona would be. I think it would have to take at least maybe 1 to 2 more months for to get this going. So for the MLB, the Japan thing is also kind of a good idea because Korea, I believe, is their baseball league is going right now kind of subtly. So the Japan thing could be a good idea, but also getting everybody over there would be really tough. And Arizona might be easier, but at the same time, Arizona is probably more infected and rougher than Japan would be. So there's just a whole entire thing going on there. Arizona is probably their best bet, though. And I like the idea of eliminating the leagues and having kind of this interesting situation where we could possibly have an NL versus NL team World Series or AL versus AL team World Series. That'd be really interesting. But who knows what will happen with the MLB. And that's it for the third part. We'll be back with the fourth with some NHL and UFC. And welcome back. So the NHL commissioner, Gary Bettman, he is unsure of if they're going to resume the season. Now, the NHL has looked at a lot of locations to go and play neutral site games between the whole entire league. Most likely, this would just be the playoffs teams, I'm assuming, because it would be tough to get the regular season games in, even because this is going to be in a few months. Most likely. So it'd be tough for them to do that. Just do the whole entire regular season. So this is mostly going to be just the postseason. Places that they've looked at, North Dakota and New Hampshire. So those are, you know, smaller places, not as much cases, and they could possibly get that in. There's suitable arenas there for minor league teams, I'm sure. So hopefully they can get that in. Possibly, you know, you could see these guys in maybe in like high school rinks and stuff like that. So that would be interesting to see on television, but obviously no fans. And it could be interesting, but I'm assuming this would just be for the playoffs as the NHL really, they're not going to be able to get the regular season going. And there's going to be a lot of teams that are unhappy. Bettman has addressed that at times, saying that there's going to be some teams that are unhappy, possibly, if they just take the playoff teams right now. So we'll see what they do there. But there's a few teams that are just a few points off of like the last playoff spot or something. So just addressing that is what Bettman's saying. And now on to the UFC. So the UFC they were going to have a UFC fight still go on in LA. But obviously, LA said no to that. And Disney, actually, who has control over the UFC in terms of broadcasting, pretty much told Dana White to not go ahead and put the fight on. So that was canceled. Dana White, I'm sure, not happy about that. And he bought an island for UFC fights. So we're not sure when this is going to happen, but Dana White has been pretty sure that there's going to be fights on this island. So that's pretty cool, just buying a private island just for fights. I mean, I think that's awesome. I think that it's going to be good for the UFC and overall the viewers of sports. I mean, fighting is two people. So that's a good sport to have go on still, obviously, because it's just the perfect sport to have in a pandemic where you're supposed to have less than like six people are sliding together. So that's two. So we're good. And it's in a private island. So, you know, Fight Island, that's so cool. Such a good idea. Even without the pandemic, they should have done something like this. I mean, that's really cool. And just overall, good idea by Dana White. So good on him for doing that. And now on to some soccer. So soccer in Europe has pretty much been outright canceled because of the coronavirus. And that has risen up some problems. So Liverpool will most likely get the Champions League trophy. They won Champions League, obviously, last time. And they are going to get the trophy if this is indeed canceled, which makes sense. Just give them back the trophy. So that makes perfect sense. But also, there's some rumors that they're trying to get Champions League back. I know the Premier League's trying to play out the rest of their season, which I don't think is going to happen. I mean, they seem like they're a little too aggressive at coming back right now, but who knows? Maybe they can. We sure know Italy's not coming back. Harry Kane, he was rumored to go to Man United, possibly for $249 million, just for, like, budget purposes, but that was also backtracked, and that rumor is really shut down kind of as fake, and Kane's going to stay at Tottenham. But as we know, soccer rumors always come around every once in a while. Soccer is crazy with transfer windows. There's always a rumor that's like, no, it's fake, and then it's real after like a year or so. So we'll see what happens there. And yeah, it's probably not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Unfortunately for me, as a Man United fan, I love Harry Kane as well. He will not be coming to Man United. And that's it for soccer. So a short part four of this podcast, but a very long podcast. Haven't done a podcast this long in a while. But that's going to be it for Sports Report Podcast, episode 26. Thank you guys for listening. And if any of you have made it this long, then good on you for that. So quick shout outs to our social media. You can follow us on Instagram, which is popping right now. Our Instagram is going off. Great content over there as well. Some good sports news if you want daily sports updates and news. You can go on that and updates for whenever we're posting a new podcast. Also on Instagram and Twitter. So on Instagram, you can follow us at Sports Report Podcast. On Twitter, it's Sports Report Po1. You can listen to us anywhere. Any podcast platform you would like. You can also check out our YouTube where we post highlight videos for a lot of sports players. And we also put small snippets of the podcast on there as well. That is also popping over 12,000 views on YouTube. So thank you so much for that. You can find us on YouTube by searching Sports Report Podcast. So that's going to be it. Thank you so much, everybody. We love you guys. We couldn't do this without your support. 8L100 will hopefully be back soon. I hope you guys stay healthy and happy through this coronavirus. And we're all going to be okay. And thank you guys so much for listening, and goodbye.